CityTalk 105.9 official podcasts online at citytalk.fm.
And now, the best of Pete Price. The best of Pete Price on CityTalk 105.9.
And it is just gone 2 p.m. on a weekday, which means it is time for only one thing. It is Take 5. Somebody who I have wanted to do this show since its inception last year, and that is a legend in his own lunchtime, Pete Price, from our very own station, City Talk, and of course, Radio City as well. Hello, Pete.
Ah, you didn't have to drag me in. I am delighted. I've always wanted to do this programme. I think it's been a lovely, lovely programme and a great listen.
Oh, you're very kind. And well, we've been looking forward to getting you on because you do bring a bit of star quality to the station, don't you?
You mean in between pantomimes right now? As you notice, I'm jaded. I've left my makeup on, so I look good.
I just thought you were going out after the show.
No.
How's the panto been going? You've been over in New Brighton this year, haven't
you? It's been at the New Floral, which has been totally awe-inspiring. It's a beautiful new theatre, but they've kept the idea of the theatre and rebuilt it inside. In fact, Neptune rebuilt it, and they've started to regenerate New Brighton. It's brought a new life to New Brighton. They've got a conference centre there as well. We have played to 89% capacities.
Wow.
It's been the most incredible pantomime. So it's lovely to be back there. Although the pantomime I did with Scylla last year at the Empire was the greatest thing I've ever done. That was a piece of history. It's nice to go back to top of the bill because when I was with Scylla, I was hanging on to the bottom of the poster.
Yes.
Now I'm up there again.
She nudged you off. Are the Wirral audiences better behaved than the Liverpool audiences?
We haven't got Wirral audiences. We have hundreds of people come over from Liverpool. They love it because it's so easy to just jump the train to New Brighton. A lot of people come to New Brighton because of the nostalgia. When I was a kid, thousands of people went over to New Brighton on the ferry and it was a mini holiday for them. So a lot of people still come back. And we've got a big following. The pantomime's got a great name. It's like the Everyman. There's pantomimes that go on and on. I mean, that's been going for years and years and years there.
And of course, you did a show over this Christmas with Scylla as well.
I did a two-hour special. We went on a journey and I was so thrilled because she opened up like she's never opened up before. It was a different style. And one of the things I wanted to get cleared up once and for all was this problem about her leaving Liverpool. You know, a lot of people say, but she left the city. Well, she didn't have any choice and she explained why. So I was pleased about that.
But do you think she comes back to Liverpool enough? Because I think there are other stars who left the city. I mean, Paul McCartney keeps a house here. He seems to come back an awful lot. He's got Lipa in the middle of the city. I think that what Liverpool, or some Liverpoolians, hold against Scylla is that she seemed to go and almost never come back.
Paul comes back because he's got family here. I think you'd be surprised how many times Scylla actually comes back. She comes back privately to see her family. But she has lived in London for many, many, many years because Brian Epstein made her live in London because that's where the record industry was. As she said on my programme, that if it was different today, she said you can make a record in your garage. You know, in those days, because she was on telly, don't forget. I mean, she tells a story about when she came home from the Palladium. And, you know, the motorways weren't like they are now. It was a 7-hour journey. So going back and forwards, she does come to Liverpool a lot more than people think. It's just that Paul is very public when he comes back. But having said that, he has got a lot of family here and he comes to see them.
Having said that, it sometimes does take 7 hours to get up Edge Lane, doesn't it? From the end of the motorway.
That's as well as the journey from London.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, it's okay. They've widened it now. Everything is good. People forget, Pete, I think, because you're still doing your show day in, day out, and you're on the radio, and your audience includes, you know, kids, teenagers, people in their 20s and 30s, I think people forget that you've actually been around on the showbiz scene, if you like, for almost as long as Scylla has, if not indeed longer.
Not longer. She, because I was a teenager, and I used to go to the Cavern, and in fact, the first time I ever saw Scylla Black was at the YMCA in Hoylake, which is no longer there. We paid 1 and 6.
You were both sleeping there.
The Big Three were on, which were a group, and she got up and sang Fever. I'll never forget it. Why it stuck in my mind, and she got up. She wasn't a singer then. She was just playing at it. That's when I first saw her. So I wasn't in the business till I was 20, No. What am I saying? 19, I think I was when I started. So I've been in the business, but she's been in longer than me.
Well, I want to talk about how you got into the business, and we will talk about that because it's a great story. I have read your book, which I know we'll be talking about later, but I think we should share your experiences in showbiz and radio and indeed in life, Pete Price, because you've got a hell of a story to tell. But also, as you know, on Take Five, the name of the game is to pick the five records you would save from your home if it was on fire. Don't worry, it's not. It's just a metaphor. And your first one is going back to 1976 to a Liverpool band. Which one have you gone for?
I went for the real thing. I've got to be honest, when you asked me to pick five records, it was a very difficult thing for me because I've got 10,000 LPs in store and they're very important to me and I've kept them and I've got stuff worth a fortune.
I had no idea you were a vinyl junkie.
Well, I was because I was a disc jockey years ago and we used to get them sent. I mean, EMI and CBS would send us albums. Now you don't get stuff. So it was so hard. But the reason I picked The Real Thing was two reasons. One, as a disc jockey, it was the greatest floor filler.
Yeah.
And it made you happy and still does to this day. And secondly, I interviewed them when I worked for Radio Merseyside because I was the first ever freelancer on Merseyside on 5 guineas a week. I did a programme called Never Mind the Price, which became twice the price, which they made from half an hour to an hour, which I thought was very clever. Still only got 5 guineas. And The Real Thing were called Vocal Perfection. They hadn't made a record. And somewhere in my archives, I have them singing Happy Birthday. Now, the original two of them have actually passed away. So it's got a lot of memories for me, and it will remind me if I'm sitting there of all the happy times as a disc jockey that I had.
Absolutely. Well, one of them is definitely still around, Eddie Amu, because he was on the show a few months ago, and indeed I repeated it last week during the Christmas week because he was such a great guy and an interesting guest and a lovely fella as well. He didn't pick one of his own songs. He wouldn't, but you can, Peter Price, and it is You to Me Are Everything, back from July 1976, 3 weeks at number one, their debut single. It is The Real Thing on City Talk 105.9. City Talk 105.9, that's You to Me Are Everything by The Real Thing, the first record chosen today on Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, by my guest who is here up until 3 o'clock, and he is a voice that you may well find familiar if you listen to this station or our sister station, Radio City, every so often, and it is Peter Price. Your very first one, Peter, still enjoying that, hearing it now?
You call me Peter Price. Now, you see, when my mum was alive, she called me Peter Price, because that's my name. Pete Price seems to have more of a ring to it, but I do love Peter.
I still hear a lot of people call you Peter on air and stuff, don't they?
Yeah, I'm not conscious. I have a middle name, Lloyd, Peter Lloyd Price. Hmm. There's a Welsh name for you.
Is that right? Because have you got Welsh heritage? You have, haven't you?
Well, I'm adopted. So I was born in Wrexham. My mother was in the forces. And what they did was when you were pregnant in those days, if you didn't want the baby, they would take you away. Nobody knew you were pregnant. You had the baby and went back as if nothing had happened. Mm. So I have Welsh blood in me because I was born in Wrexham. And then my mum, who adopted me, her husband, Dave Lloyd Price, is from Merthyr, and they've got a big Welsh family. And it's funny, every time I go down there, I seem to go down into this Welsh accent, and I don't know why I do it, but it always happens.
The funny thing is, when you say that, this is going to sound ridiculous, but you look like you could be from South Wales. And the funny thing is, I know that you found out recently that you've also got Italian blood in you, and of course there's a lot of Italian blood down in South Wales as well.
Yeah, but it's the nose. It's the nose, the Italian bit. You know, that very briefly, the story, this is how crazy I am. I wrote to the Don, who is in Palermo prison, to see if he could try and find my father, who reportedly is from Sicily.
Yeah.
And he got me in touch with a television company. It was crazy. We wrote this incredible letter to the head of the mafia.
You didn't wake up with a horse's head in your bed, did you?
No. I just... And now I've got families climbing out the woodwork who are... Seriously, I only had one at Christmas. We have a woman who is convinced that I am her brother. And we certainly look alike, but it's crazy. I've got families coming out. The best email I got was, because I got emails, I was on a program in Italy called Scella Vista, which is a very big television show where they find lost people, and it's been going for 20 years. It's a very important show. It's on at 9 o'clock on a Friday night. And I got some incredible emails from people that thought they were my father. The one they actually thought was my father had a heart attack through the shock. Luckily, he's all right. But the best email I got was from Hans in Germany. Hello, I am not your father, but I find you extremely attractive and I want to kiss and hug you. So I emailed back saying, please send photos.
Yes. I'll meet you under the arches in Berlin.
Loved it.
Did you give it the full Pete Price hit when you went onto TV, or did you?
Don't be silly. Don't be. Did I? Would I miss 20 minutes on Italian television? I'll be truthful with you now. Right. There's a photograph who is supposed to be my father that my mother gave me. The photograph of the person they found, who's supposed to be my father, looked nothing alike. But I went, oh my goodness, it's you. It's got to be him. And they said, send a message. And I looked into the television camera and went, if you are my father and my family, all I want is to spend some time in an Italian village and drink wine and eat tomatoes from the village. I just couldn't believe I played the game.
Oh, that's lovely. Did you tell Scylla that they sound like they're nicking her ideas from Surprise Surprise as well? keep that one under your hat. Pete Price is my guest on today's Take 5 on City Talk 105.9. I was going to ask you about your career a little bit, Pete, if I may, because...
That's the biggest question in the world. It's so hard to put it into that.
Well, you alluded to it earlier. You started out back in...
I started at the Cabin Club. I started at the Cabin Club as a chef. I will put it into a little nutshell. I went to catering college, passed all my exams, first time ever, went to sea, went down to work in London, came back, got a job in the Cabin Club in Wood Street. I was the chef. One night, I noticed that the band had gone off, and I said, you should have a disco here. And they said, what's a disco? Because there wasn't anybody. You didn't dance to records in those days. You danced to live music and then had a rest. And I said, you play records. And they said, well, you do it. Have a go. And I had 10 records and one turntable, and I was the chef, and I was screaming and... like I do, and making a noise and getting people up to dance. And they went, we like that. And then one day they said to me, do you fancy doing the job? And I went to my mother and she cried her eyes out, saying, you know, you spent all this time doing this. You can't do...
She wanted you to keep chefing.
Well, because she didn't understand what putting records were on. Now, I was getting £20 a week chefing and working 18 hours a day. I was working my socks off, running 3 restaurants. They said to me, how much do you want for putting records on? I thought, you can't ask for money. You can't ask for money. And they said, well, we'll give you £20. And I was so shocked. And I went, and they went, all right, 25, but that's it. And the first time I got my wages, I was embarrassed. But then I realised afterwards it was an industry that I was bringing people in and creating an atmosphere. And that, in a nutshell, how it started. And then the owner of the Shakespeare came to see me and said, we're looking for a host and a compere. And the rest is history.
Do you remember what you spent your first 25 quid pay packet on?
I do indeed. A tea's made for my mother. All her life she wanted, and they were £32, so I had to pay the extra money as well, which was a lot of money those days. What an ugly looking thing it was.
You could practically employ someone back in those days to actually make you a fresh cup of tea. Get a butler for 32
it was just,
quid.
Yeah, but we were, yeah, my mother always wanted a tea. My mother was my life, but she gave me my chance in life, you know. I mean, the other one gave me away. And she gave me, the best thing she ever did for me was give me away to the most wonderful woman in the world.
Pete, we've got to get through 4 more tracks on Take 5 today. Got one coming up by Westlife very shortly. But you also have to rescue either a film or a TV series from the metaphorically burning home we've put you in. Which one have you gone for?
Very difficult, that, because I'm a Coronation Street fan and I've got some of the early stuff. But I went for a movie called Death in Venice, which won all sorts of awards. It was Dirk Bogarde. It was about the conductor, Marlowe. And it was a beautiful period piece about Venice at the turn of the century. And it really was about a man's struggle to find himself. He'd written some bad music. He'd written a concerto that went wrong. And his wife and him had had problems with their relationship. And he sees a young man in Venice and wants to help. He's fascinated by the beauty of this young man. Because he's not gay, but he just is in love with this boy's face and he just wants to write more music. And he goes away to get this boy is part of a Russian family of aristocracy. And then the plague breaks out and he wants to stop this boy, anything happening to the boy. He just wants to, it's like the son he's never had. It's a very, you take a different message from it. But the end of the film is terrible. He goes back. And he goes, and it's so sad. He's a very distinguished man. He's a grumpy old man, but he goes and gets makeup on. And they blacken his moustache. They put white powder on his face to try and make him look younger. He goes on the beach. He's sitting on the beach deck chair. The boy goes past. He goes to speak to the boy because he's never spoke to the boy. And as he does, He has a heart attack. The boy goes into the water with his friends and the man dies. And it is. There's so many messages in the film. The music is spectacular. The scenery, it's wonderful. And the boy in it, I tracked down and did an interview with him.
Oh,
I
really?
Can't pronounce his name. He was in a rock group. And I found him in Switzerland years ago.
Oh,
and
fantastic.
There, did an interview with him. Because I was so overwhelmed with the film. The movement of the film, the way it was directed. And I love movies. I can't live without movies. Mm. I go 3 or 4 times a week to the movies.
There we go. Death in Venice. You can save that. Not for the first time, about a man going to a canal, falling in love with a boy. But there's different films about that. It's not one of those films. Thank
it's
you,
not one of the. You've just destroyed. I'm changing my mind. I'm going to take Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. I hate you.
No, you can't have that because that can be misinterpreted as well, especially the bit where she wakes up feeling grumpy. Anyway, you can move on to your next song instead.
Before I do, can I tell you what Stan Boardman did years ago? We were in Rill doing pantomime. We were doing Snow White. Now, I was playing Nurse Glucose and I used to come home from Rill and never late for my show. Well, this particular night, Stan was on one. So he handcuffed me to the wishing well. And while Snow White was lying there, because she's supposed to be dead, he picked up one of the dwarves and threw him on top of her, to which she screamed. He was so naughty to work with.
That's dwarf abuse, isn't it? You can get arrested for that
nowadays.
Yeah,
but it's better than throwing them in skittles, which used to happen.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, that's true. Maybe at some of the nights you hosted. Certainly not dwarves are our next band. There's 5 of them for a start, not 7. And they are Westlife. Which Westlife, Jack, have you gone for?
I picked Kick in the Head. And the reason for that is, 1, I love the song. 2, I love Westlife. But 3, of all the pantomimes, I did one at Royal Court. And I sang that with Daisy the Cow. And we had 2 dancers inside who were spectacular. And I did a duet with a cow. And they did a tap dance in the middle, which brought the house down. So that reminds me of some very happy pantomimes.
Daisy the Cow, if you're listening, this one's for you. It is Westlife, and ain't that a kick in the head? City Talk 105.9. This is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor, the show that each and every different weekday invites a different person up the studio tower to imagine which 5 records they would save from their home if it was on fire. And today's guest is a man who needs no invitation at the tower, because he got his own key, because he works here. It is Pete Price from our late night show, and indeed broadcast on Radio City as well. Pete, you've been here for a while, haven't you?
I have indeed. I've got to say, by the way, the idea of the house being burnt down is quite a scary idea, because mine nearly did get burned down once, which was really worrying. I had a lady that did for me for the cleaning. I used to clean before her and after her, because she was not that good, but I loved her to death. She was with me for years, but she was getting a bit old, bless her. And one day she left the gas tap on for 8 hours. 8 hours. I smelt it when I was in the garage. And I really was very, very lucky. I joke about it, but I mightn't have had a home.
Could have been like that old, remember that public service advert? Brian, I can smell gas. Yeah. And then she goes to switch the light on. No! Yeah. You'd have been good at shouting no as well.
But
if
I'd, yeah, because I come in at night, I actually could have seriously killed myself. 8 hours it had been on. She swears blind she never did it. Well, there's nobody else in the place except me and her, so I certainly didn't do it.
And it's not just obviously, I mean, the physical damage to you, but I know that you're very house proud. I mean, I think I read in your book that, I think you said you cried, didn't you, when you paid the mortgage off? Or certainly that it was the proudest day.
It was. I mean, I did. All my life, I remember getting a mortgage when I was a kid, thinking, have I got to live for the rest of my life with this mortgage? And then one day I paid it off, and it was incredible. I am house proud, terribly house proud, and I love my home, because my home has got all my memories, because I've never moved. I've been in the same place for a long, long, long time, because I have so many happy memories there.
You're right. Flamboyant man, you dress flamboyantly, you act flamboyantly. I've not been to your house. If I went inside, what's it like? Is it like Liberace's palace?
No. It's got 2 sides to it. One is ultra modern, which is very minimalistic. The other one is like an art gallery. I collect art. I love art. I have some statues by Arthur Dooley, the late Arthur Dooley, a lovely character of Liverpool, who I thought was amazing as a sculptor. I have some paintings by Nelson Mandela, some paintings by Prince Charles. I have some paintings from a guy called Larry Rushton, because I collect clowns. A lot of people don't like my art because some of my clowns are very scary. One of them is an actual murderer behind the mask. Because as a stand-up comic, we all live a different life. You say that I'm flamboyant when I'm in my home, and very few people come to my home, but they're the ones. They're there because they're picked to come. I say that in all modesty, because my home is very private. So that is my inner sanctum. That's where I can be exactly what I want to be.
As well as your paintings, you've also got photographs, I know, and you get to rescue one of them from the flames.
That's the hardest thing in the world. Well, it's not the hardest thing to pick the picture, but I have collages, and I actually used them once. And we did a function, and I took my collages, and somebody nicked them for a joke. And I was distraught. I was really, got them back. Somebody thought it was a laugh to do. It was in a hotel, so they put them in a hotel room. The only photo I would grab, which is on the left-hand side as I go out, is a photo of my mother holding a photo of me. And what it was, my mother was the shyest woman in the world. And one day I woke up many years ago and the local paper on the Wirral had got this picture of my mum holding my picture, and they'd rung her. And she'd done a story about me. She wasn't that type of woman. It was, he's not too big for a smack. And it was this photo. So I would grab that photo.
And there's a few people who wanted to smack you since.
Oh, well, I got smacked, didn't I? 4 years ago in pantomime, I came out, walked down Matthew Street, turned the corner, and somebody broke my cheekbone, knocked me out.
I remember that. Is that the only time you've been subject to sort of physical abuse for being Pete Price?
Not really. I had a wonderful woman when we were in Stanley Street who was pregnant, who was smashing my car with a baseball bat.
Nice.
Because I'd cut her off. I've been to court twice with people. Once that was threatened to shoot me, and another one threatened to torture me. I've taken both of them to court and won both cases. People either love me or hate me. There's no in between.
How much of it is an act? What we hear on air, particularly when you cross swords with people, particularly on the Sunday night show, which is the open forum and something of a zoo in atmosphere. How much of what we see when you shout at people, shout them down, cut them off? How much of that is you playing up to a stereotype of yourself to entertain people? And how much of that is you genuinely reacting?
That's exactly me. Exactly me. And I've got to point out, the people I cut off usually get cut off because they use the four-letter words or say something very offensive. If I was allowed, through my bosses, to actually do a show at 2 o'clock in the morning, one morning, and let them hear what I have to put up with, people out there would be very, very shocked. You know, because you're in the industry and word gets round. Have you heard what happened last night? We get the most dreadful, dreadful abuse. And what makes me angry is I love a wind-up. I think it's great. But they're not clever, these people. They waste airtime. We are one of the most fortunate countries in the world where we have freedom of speech. And I hate it when people abuse it.
Do you feel that perhaps you almost encourage people to ring in and wind you up, albeit unintelligently, because of the way you react? If you took a deep breath and counted to 10 and didn't go off in the deep end when they wound you up, they'd get bored of doing it.
I know exactly what you mean, but 4 hours, 5 nights a week, it's very difficult not to, because it is radio, is theatre as well, and I do know how to play an audience. But genuinely, when I lose it, it's because I've lost it.
Well, at least it's genuine, and I think people warm to that as well. And you do have people who love you out there, Peter. And your next song is about love as well. Bit of Diana Ross back from 1991 from her album The Force Behind the Power. It's When You Tell Me That You Love Me. Why this one?
I don't ever talk about my private life, as in my relationships, but I had a relationship with somebody who sang that particular song.
Diana Ross, was it?
It wasn't Diana Ross, no. In fact, Diana Ross has sat on my knee twice, once in Vegas, once in Southport, on the left knee when she sang Reach Out and Touch. She came out the audience and sat on my knee. There's another story. I don't talk about my relationships, and because I think it's very private. And in fact, in my book, I never wrote about them because I think it's very private. David Essex once said, you know, why should I be on a kiss and tell? And I really do think it's private. But this particular person who sang this, I'll say who it was. His name was Neil, because he was very open about our relationship. And it lasted 4 years. He was a singer that I could have made a star. I would have done anything to make him a star, because he had the most amazing talent. He was frightened of rejection. He made money out of it. He's been on the cruise ships and worked very hard. But I was in a dressing room one day and heard him sing that song. And I'd never heard a man sing it before. And I just fell in love with his voice. I fell in love with his voice. I've never, ever done anything like that before. Then I met him and fell in love with the guy.
Let's hear it now, shall we? It's the Diana Ross version on City Talk 105.9, chosen by Pete Price, and it is When You Tell Me That You Love Me. City Talk 105.9, that's Diana Ross, When You Tell Me That You Love Me. Chosen that one, as indeed all the songs this hour have been, by Pete Price, who is my guest on Take 5 from now up until 3 o'clock, talking us through the five records he would rescue from his burning home, and some of the bits and pieces as well, including, Pete, a book.
Well, that's the easiest question you've asked me, because I would take my autobiography, and the reason I would take that is because it is full of pictures. So all the pictures I have lost in the fire, I would have in the book. And it's not because it's my book, it's because every picture in there tells a story. When we wrote the book, I wanted it to be a journey, because I'm not a great reader. So I wanted it for me to be easy, so for other people to be easy. And do you know that 2 years later, it is still selling fantastically? This Christmas just gone, we've just been inundated with books to sign. So that book of mine, which is called Pete Price Name Dropper, is perfect, because it's got every picture that I would lose in it.
Mm. And you wrote it with a journalist called Adrian Butler,
yeah,
who I know. What was that like? Because you must have had to open up to him more than you'd probably opened up to anyone.
I'll give you an exclusive. First of all, Alistair McRae, who's the editor of The Echo, it was his idea. He then put me in touch with Sport Media, who produced the book and published it. And I had the most incredible team that put that book together. And since then, their book style has changed because of my book, because it was beautifully put together. And two printers rang up and said, what fantastic quality. So that was great. I was offered Adrian Butler. Adrian and I were from two different worlds, and we had to spend some time. The first day he came to my home, he spilled a drink over two photographs, but didn't tell me. And I thought, have I made a mistake here?
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, and then he was a bit overawed by me. So that was that. But then we hit it off. What he doesn't know is that he didn't get everything out of me.
Really?
I'm a very guarded person. I'm a very, very, one of my records will tell you, I'm a very, very guarded person, and I know exactly what to tell somebody. And I didn't go down that private of my relationships. I kept away from that. But having said that, book two is going to be The Bitch Is Back. It's everybody I've ever slept with, and it gets published the day I die.
Wonderful.
Because if I was around, I'd be attacked.
I look forward to that, although the way you're going, Pete, it'll probably be another good 30 or 40 years left in you yet. Let's hope so, anyway.
Yeah.
City Talk 105.9, the home of great music and great conversation. This is Take 5 with me, Will Batchelor. You know me, and you probably know my guest for this hour even better, because he's been here in radio and indeed in Liverpool a lot longer than I have. He is Pete Price of this very station. You can hear him on Late Night City between 10 and 2 o'clock on both this station and our sister station, Radio City 96.7. And Pete is he's calming down. He hasn't cut me off yet. We haven't had an argument yet, but, you know, there's a few minutes left. And Pete's taken us through the five records he would save from his burning home, including, Pete, the next one, Mariah Carey.
The shortest link you'll ever get from me, I just mentioned about being very private. Well, Hero sums up everything. There is a story tied up with that piece of music that I will never tell, and I will take to my grave.
Go on, tell it. Go on. Come on, Pete, you know you want to.
I think we're going to have our first round.
City Talk 105.9. Listen, when Pete Wright says he's going to do a short link, take the short link. This is Hero by Mariah Carey. Pete, you've got just one more song to come, plus an object as well. Worth reminding people, your run is still going, isn't it? You're in Panto till...
We're there till the 10th of January, but I don't know if there's any tickets left. We've done the most amazing business. It's worth a phone call, but don't hold your breath.
And what about the new year for your radio show? What do you hope 2010 will bring to your late night call-in? Is there a topic you haven't done before? Is there something you want to get out the show?
Well, you're a journalist as well as a broadcaster, so you know how hard it is to find something. What we do is we plan the day and then wait to see if something happens. And if a breaking story breaks, we're there like a shot, you know. I'm going to have a sabbatical. I haven't told the boss yet, but I want to take a bit of time off. I don't want a holiday. I want a bit of time off. I would like a little break. So I'm thinking of having a sabbatical and going finding myself. Where I'm going to go, I don't know. Probably finish up at Ellesmere Port.
Are you talking you're thinking of taking, a couple of months? Six months?
No. I'd like a month. I'd love a month off for a change. And I don't know how my boss would feel about that, because I'm getting older. There's a lot I want to do. And I really want to find myself. I want to find some time for myself. Because regardless of what people think, I do work very hard and I do put a lot of hours in, because I'm passionate about what I do. So I haven't spoke to my bosses yet.
Do you think...
are you listening, bosses?
Do you think you'll be doing your call-in show, your late-night call-in show, until the day you die? Do you want to be doing it to the day you die?
And I want to die on stage. But somewhere nice, not a poxy little club. I want to die. I mean, Tommy Cooper died, who was a great mate of mine, live from Her Majesty's, and I knew he died. I just knew it. I was watching it, and I know the man inside out, and I knew what he did. And I went, oh, my God. I just couldn't believe what I saw. I love it. It keeps me young. I mean, the demographics of my show is amazing. It's from 10-year-olds, well, it's even younger, up to 90-year-olds. It's amazing the people that listen to my programme.
Absolutely. And I've had the privilege of covering it a couple of times, and it's you do get the full range, absolutely. So when you say you want to die on stage...
Not die... Because you know that that's an expression when you're having a bad night.
Some of your jokes have died, I'm sure.
Oh, but, I've died some terrible deaths. If we had another hour, I could do an hour of dying on stage.
Would you take a radio studio as a stage? Could you? What about dying on air?
That would be interesting, wouldn't it? I always remember, I don't know why this has jumped into my head, Tony Prince, when Elvis died, he was on Luxembourg at the time, threw himself prostrate on the desk. I just hope that whoever's producing me at the time could cope with it. I think Jonathan, who's my producer right now, would be very frustrated and not know how to handle it. Yeah. I think Jay, who used to produce me, would take over, push me out the seat and do the programme. So...
Well, I suspect that the gentleman behind your next song is dead already. I think he is Gene Kelly. Have we lost him?
He is indeed. He is indeed.
Before we get to it, though, you have to save an object from the flames. Which object have you gone for?
That was the most difficult question as well. In fact, the whole programme's been extremely difficult to put together for me. It's a little tiny, nothing China doll. It's a stupid little thing, a little ornament it is, not a doll, which came from my mum's chandler's shop. My mother had an old-fashioned chandler's shop that sold paraffin and Aunt Sally and tea cloths and tea services. And it was an incredible... I love that smell of sandpaper and firewood. It was incredible. And that's the last little object I've got from my mum's shop. And it was such a happy time for me in that shop. So that would be the ornament I would grab on the way out.
Less happy for your poor Aunt Sally, though, by the sounds of it. Fancy being sold out of a chandler's shop.
I expect that from you.
That's like one of your jokes
even know
that
what
dies
Aunt
on
Sally
stage.
Is,
I must admit, I don't. What is Aunt Sally?
Aunt Sally, we sold it from a casket.
Yeah.
We had vinegar on draft, Aunt Sally on draft. I actually forgotten what Aunt Sally
is. It's like a sauce, something you put on your food.
No. Oh, no. It was something to do with like bleach or something like that. Maybe people could ring me up tonight and tell me I've forgotten what Aunt Sally actually is.
Pete Price, on from 10 o'clock tonight on your wireless. Ring him up and tell him what Aunt Sally is, and then he can tell me the next day. Thank you, Peter. Your last song. Is indeed by Gene Kelly, as I mentioned earlier. Which one have you gone for?
Singing in the Rain.
Why?
For the most obscure reason. When I was a disc jockey, Sunday night was the biggest night ever. I became a partner in Rupert's Club in Birkenhead, and we had the nicest people in the world. Oh, what a crowd. And one night I put Singing in the Rain on, and somebody threw a beer over the person next to them. And 6 months later, when I put the record on, people would get buckets of water and throw them over each other. The whole club went ballistic and they did the dance to Singing in the Rain. Eventually, my partners robbed the record and put it in the safe. But it was the most exciting. It was a party night. It was an atmosphere. Forget all these phone parties. We used to do it good style. And I'm still friendly with virtually every one of those customers used to come. And very briefly, I had this incredible idea. And this is when I really had a bad time and had to go under police escort everywhere. I had this idea that if I filled a club with good looking lads, the girls would flock. So I started banning people who were ugly. It was the funniest thing ever. People come to the door. Can we come in? Well, you can't. What do you mean? Well, you're ugly. What? And people say, are you going to the club tonight? No. You can't get in. You're ugly. You're ugly. Seriously, we got all the nationals with it. It was the most incredible gimmick. And the girls used to flock in. The doormen weren't very happy. They were escorting me everywhere when I went out.
I bet. I tell you what, once you've thrown a bucket of water over someone, you just put the bucket on your head and then no one can tell if you're ugly
or
not.
Absolutely.
That's a good idea. Well, I tell you what, grab a bucket now, Pete. Or what we've got in here, maybe a fire extinguisher or something, because we are going to play it. It is your final song. All that remains for me to say is, Pete Price, thank you for being my guest.
And can I say, I've had the most enjoyable times listening to this programme. It's been incredible, some of the guests you've got. It's just a wonderful listen. And isn't it fascinating to dig into somebody else's life?
Yes, absolutely. That's why I love doing it.
The best of Pete Price on City Talk 105.9.
City Talk 105.9, official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.